Boston.
What's up, everybody? This is Young MC hanging out with Down with the Kings on Maximum FM Hip Hop.
Turn up the bass! You're listening to Down with the Kings on Maximum FM Hip Hop.
Hey, what's going on? It's Yardman here, and we are back with Down with the Kings. Thanks, y'all, for joining us. I'm pleased because our next guest was a big part of the hip-hop scene in the late 80s, early 90s. His track had everyone busting a move, and he's here on Down with the Kings to talk about that back in the day. He is Mr. Young MC. What's happening, my man?
Chilling, old man. How you doing?
We're good, you know, just here paying tribute to hip-hop like we do each and every week, and I was really excited when I had an opportunity to connect with you because, you know, you definitely made some waves and hits and got a lot of people's attention back in the day when, and I sort of, when I think back to that time, I think your arrival on the scene was rather timely because it helped launch the music and propel it forward by getting that much more people's attention to it. And it was new at the time, right? So I think, you know, you played a key role in that. When you sort of think back to then, you know, you just jumped on the scene. What was your sort of thoughts on your arrival at that time?
Well, I mean, when you're in it, you don't really see the impact of it on other people. I know for me, I had been listening to hip-hop for a long time, but I listened to hip-hop when it was underground, before Rapper's Delight, before FM radio, before a lot of things, when it was just like basements, and you were lucky if you got a college station or a public access station or something really low on the AM dial to play you. So a lot of the stuff was just, you know, trying to get the rhymes better, rapping over breakbeats and DJs and things like that, and the idea of records was pretty new, so
right.
So that was my view of hip hop. So when I'm in it, it was a little more difficult for me to identify with people listening to hip hop for the first time. But as I've gotten older, then I could see that. You know, Bust a Move, and also Help Write Wild Thing and Funky Comadina, and then also my other track, Know How, which was big in you know, with the DJs and overseas. Like, those were some of the first rap records that people had listened to that they actually gravitated to. So that
right.
made me feel good that I played that role and that I could make music that was accessible to a wider audience.
That accessibility element is big because if people don't know you're out there or people don't know you exist, you know, it doesn't matter how good your rhymes are or, you know, how good the beats are. And when you look at sort of hip-hop today, accessibility is not an issue anymore. I mean, anyone could be a superstar overnight, it seems.
That's the point. I had the burden, especially when, you know, going out to the West, you know, coming out to the West Coast and being one of the first crossover rappers from the West Coast, that not only did I have that pressure on me to say, okay, I want to be able to continue, you know, have there be a legacy of pop music coming from the West Coast, or at least popular rap music coming from the West Coast, but even rap in general. Because if you break down a barrier, break down a door, and then you have listeners listening to you for the first time, and they like you, you hope that they'll like the next person to keep it going. So you always worry about the genre holding up. So I'd hear people, oh, it's just like disco, it'll go away, that kind of thing. So I had that pressure on me as well. Whereas artists today, there's no, you know, rap is just like country. Rap is just like
right.
rock or any other genre. It's there. The kids have grown up with it. It's not going to go away. And the actions
right.
of one or two artists or even a whole, you know, region is not going to affect rap music, you know, or hip hop at all.
Yeah.
That
right.
is something, and I'm really happy to see that change because it allows the artist to just kind of be who they are and do what they want to do as opposed to being concerned. You know, to be honest, I was concerned with everything I was doing, at least for the first couple of records. Like, okay, I got to make sure that you know I remain a part of a vibrant genre.
Mm-hmm. And when you sort of talk about, you know, the arrival of hip hop and the fact that, you know, people start talking about like it's not a fad anymore and it'll be around for a while, I think those involved with the industry, especially in the early days, feel good about that because that's a lot of sweat, a lot of hard work, and a lot of tears to get
sure.
to this point and now be part of our fabric. And you see major corporations are gravitating to the hip hop industry, if you will, and using that to sort of market or promote their products or brands. And
well,
I think that's probably the biggest sign that you're here, right?
Well, there's a couple of things with that. Number one, obviously, that means that the music is being more accepted, but that also means that the music's getting older, meaning that the young kids that were 10 and 15 years old when hip-hop first started are now 40 and running companies. And instead of choosing the classical music or even, you know, I do a lot of corporate events. So instead of, you know, hiring that motivational speaker or, you know, having that legacy act from another genre, I've gone and done, you know, corporate shows with, you know, me and Coolio and Tone Loc and, you know, Digital Underground. And the corporate people love it because we're in that age demographic now that it was the music that they had as kids. So it's a lot more accepted than it would have been if I tried to do a corporate gig, let's say, in 1990.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've heard on numerous occasions, you know, the decision makers at these corporate companies come to you and go, I listened to you as a kid. I grew up in your music. You've probably heard that endless times, I'm imagining.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, and it is what it is because I was a kid when I was making the music, so I try not to take that too personally. You know what I mean? When someone, you know, someone with gray hair comes up to me and tells me that they were listening when they were a kid, you know, I'm like, well, yeah, I was a kid too when I was making it, so I kind of get that.
I got you loud and clear. When did you kind of realize, again, when you sort of talk about being in it and, you know, you're not really recognizing until sort of you step away a little bit, when did you sort of first realize that, yeah, this is big and, you know, especially more for yourself specifically, because I'm imagining when you come in as a young kid, you don't really know where it's going to go. You have dreams, obviously, you have hopes, but that blow up moment, when did you realize that?
Well, I mean, on a micro level, I would travel places I'd never been before, and people would know me and know the record and sing along and that kind of thing. So I'm like, okay, you know, they're hearing it somewhere. And you got to remember, this is really before cable you know, really took hold. So not everybody had MTV, so it was getting played on a lot of local. The video was getting played on a lot of local stations and that lot of local networks. There was no internet. The cell phones were really, you know, satellite phones that cost like $1,500 and were, you know, big as a briefcase. So the ability to move information around from place to place was nowhere like it was nowhere like it is today. So I had to kind of go from place to place to get it on a micro level, and obviously the macro level is like when I won the American Music Award and won the Grammy, and I'm meeting artists that I idolize, and they know me. You know, that was like, okay, I think I'm here. I think
that's
I've done something.
That's a pitch myself moment, right?
Right.
No, that can be totally amazing. Now, I remember hearing a story about you auditioning on the phone before you got your record deal. Is that how it went down?
Yeah, I was in college, and it was the end of my sophomore year or the summer before my junior year, and I was supposed to try to get a record deal in New York, me and a friend, and that didn't work out. But he knew some guys that ran Delicious Vinyl out in L.A. So I'm coming into college right before my junior year. This would have been August of '87. And I get on the phone and I rap for them over the phone, and they sent me a contract in the mail a week later.
Wow.
So, obviously, you know, it's not like the most favorable contract in the world, but it's a contract. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
at that point, I don't think anyone,
you know,
signing
and
go,
that started everything.
Wow. And that was really, and again, you know, at that time, Delicious Vinyl was a major company. It was a record company.
It was kind of fledgling because Tone had only done a local, like a local record. They had Mellow Man Ace, and I want to say they had one other act at that point that they had even done local releases on. So when I came, then I co-wrote Wild Thing, co-wrote Funky Comadina. I had my local singles, Let 'Em Know, and then Know How was my first national single. And then Bust a Move, after seeing the success of the dance records, we did Bust a Move because Principal's Office was actually written first. So that was initially, you know, going to be my first single. That ended up being my second single. And Bust a Move outlasted my second and third single and stayed on the charts for 40 weeks. So at that point, too, seeing the Billboard movement, I'm like, okay, this is a pretty special record, you know, at that point.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Did Did you feel at that time, like when and obviously the numbers don't lie and they give you that validation, but when you're making a song and you're in the studio putting together,
I don't even you don't have to finish the question. No clue. I know. I'll put it to you like this. So me and Tone, you know, work on Wild Thing. So they give Tone, you know, Tone does a few verses, and they feel it's a bit racy, so they say, Marvin, your stuff is more accessible. So I do some verses, and you know, we go through the machinations, and we sit, at the end of it, I sit down with Tone, and he's like, you know, well, I hope I can make enough money to get a new car. And I'm like, okay, I hope we can sell enough records. I hope we can sell 30 or 50,000 records so I can pay off my school loans. That record had sold like 3-4 million copies to the point where the record label is like, okay, maybe we should stop making singles so we can start selling albums. This is how many we're selling. So then that happens, and then they say, okay, Tone needs a follow-up. So then we work on Funky Comadina in 2.5 verses, two verses or so that I did in Funky Comadina, make the record. That record goes out and sells 2 million. Now it's Marvin's turn. So now Busta Move sounds totally different. Busta Move has, you know, slower, you know, more funky. Doesn't have the rock edge. Remember, both of Tone's records had the rock edge. So I'm like, okay, I may lose that harder rock crowd and all that other stuff. So I sit down and I write it, and I'm like, okay, I hope someone listens to it, because a lot of people had not heard me rap before. They'd only heard the stuff that I've written through Tone's lyrics over rock music.
Right.
So I had nothing to hold on to say, okay, this is going to be a big record. And in hindsight, it's turned out, at least in licensing case, it didn't sell as much as Wild Thing and Funky Comadina, but it's had a longer life, longer tail, and I've gotten more licenses and gotten more uses in movies and commercials and all that over the life of it, which is now 26 years.
Wow.
Yeah, in May. Uh-huh.
I tell you what, let's throw the Busta Move. Let's get our listeners a chance to hear the track that goes down, you know, one of the greatest and has done incredible things for you. This is Busta Move by Young MC on Down with the Kings.
Bust it.
Here's a jam for all the fellas. Try to do what those ladies tell us. Get shot down cause you're overzealous. Play hard to get females, get jealous. Okay, smarty, go to a party. Girls are scantily clad and showing body. A chick walks by, you wish you could sex her, but you're standing on the wall like you was Poindexter. Next day's function, high class luncheon. Food is served in your stone cold munching. Music comes on, people start to dance, but then you ate so much you nearly split your pants. A girl starts walking, guys start gawking. Sits down next to you and starts talking. Says she wanna dance cause she likes to groove. So come on, fatso, and just bust the move. Someone could cure your lonely condition. Looking for love in all the wrong places. No fine girls, just ugly faces. From frustration, first inclination is to become a monk and leave the situation. But every dark tunnel has a lighter hope, so don't hang yourself with a celibate rope. New movie showing, so you're going. Could care less about the five you're blowing. Theater gets dark just to start the show. Then you spot a fine woman sitting in your row. She's dressed in yellow, she says hello. Come sit next to me, you fine fellow. You run over there without a second to lose. And what comes next? Hey, bust the move. So they can seem witty. Tell a funny joke just to get some play. Then you try to make a move and she says no way. Girls are faking, goodness saking. They want a man who brings home the bacon. Got no money and you got no car, then you got no woman. And there you are. Some girls are sadistic, materialistic. Looking for a man makes them opportunistic. They're lying on the beach perpetrating a tan so that a brother with money can be their man. So on the beach you're strolling, real high rolling. Everything you have is yours and not stolen. A girl runs up with something to prove, so don't just stand there and bust the move. Break it down for me, fellas.
Harry. In 5 days from now, he's gonna marry. He's hoping you can make it there if you can, cause in the ceremony, you'll be the best man. You say neato, check your libido, and roll to the church in your new tuxedo. The bride walks down just to start the wedding, and there's one more girl you won't be getting. So you start thinking, then you start clicking. A bridemaid looks and thinks that you're winking. She thinks you're kinda cute, so she winks back, and now you're feeling really firm, cause the girl is stacked. Reception's jumping, bass is pumping. Look at the girl and your heart starts thumping. Says she wanna dance to a different groove. Now you know what to do, G, bust the move.
Young MC joining us. We just heard Bust the Move, the song, 26 years ago. And how much millions of copies that record sell?
See, well, all right. Officially, it's probably double platinum, although I never got a double platinum record. So according to the RIAA that does the plaques, it only went platinum, but I haven't really looked into trying to get another one. Wow. You know, it's hard to say. I would venture to say it's several million, you know, copies. Right. But
incredible.
If you're including, you know, downloads and streams and all that. I mean, how many people? I mean, look, if you say North America, if you want to include Canada, what do we got? 350, 370,
like
80
that.
Million people.
Right.
So let's say out of 380 million people, how many people do you think heard? Probably 200 at least.
I would say
right, 200 million.
Yeah.
I'm not arguing with that. Now, how did they hear it? Did they hear it on the radio?
Right.
Did they hear a stream?
Exactly.
What did they hear? So,
right.
That's the thing.
And we're not even talking about like song placements, whether in commercials or movies or wherever. I mean, that's a whole other avenue that creates opportunities as well. To hear
it's ridiculous, and it brings in a new demographic. So. I was at, you know, dating myself, I'm at my 25th college reunion, and
mm-hmm.
I'm, you know, talking with friends, and the record had basically come out after, you know, the record really hit big after I left college. So
mm-hmm.
I'm, you know, seeing some of my classmates and talking with them, and, you know, they have families and kids and the whole nine yards. So, you know, everything was cool and whatever, and then I remember I'm leaving, and one guy came up to me and said, Marvin, I'm sorry, but I texted my daughter and said that, you know, I was at the reunion and that you were here, and she insisted that I get a picture with you. Now, mind you, his daughter, you know, 10, 12, you know, whatever.
Wow.
But if the record's on Glee, if the record's in You, Me, and
right.
Dupree, or you know, Can't Hardly Wait, or any of these other properties, that's where the young kids hear about it. That's where the young
right.
kids are like, oh, I really want to, you know, I really like this record, and it's one of the few. I had a lot of people say that it was one of the few records that their parents allowed them, rap records that they allowed them to listen to, because it didn't
That's
have
the
foul
point.
Language, and they like my background,
right.
and it's okay. Listen to this guy. This is a good guy to listen to.
That's it. That's a great point. Mm-hmm. I'm imagining that you know, there's a side of this, and we sort of talk about all the success and the notoriety you got from the song, but I'm imagining there's the other side of this where people, you know, label you know, one-hit wonder. I know that was actually one of your albums you used called Return of the One-Hit Wonder.
Well,
but I guess from my perspective, I was going to make the point here, just from my perspective, I'm you know, when you think of an artist that creates a song, creates a track, you know, this the kind of success you had is ultimately what they'd want, that people love
their song. Well, that's the thing. If you once again go back to that number, let's say 380 million people.
Yeah.
All right? Whatever number, Noah, Bust the Move, pick another song, single song from one artist during that time, especially a hip-hop song that they would know more than mine.
Right.
I don't see it. Mm-hmm. I don't see And that's because not as much – see – here's the thing. The record, the good thing about Bust the Move is that it got played, but it didn't get played so much when it was out that you got sick of it. You know,
right.
the record came out and we weren't getting radio, but we got video. Then we got sales.
Right.
Then finally, the radio people saw the sales and the video, and they started playing it on the radio. So at no time were you bombarded with 80 plays a week. And,
right.
you know, the album's all over the place. It never had a coordinated marketing plan like that, because the record never, you know, peaked like that. So
Correct.
People never really had a chance to get sick of it. It was like, oh, I like that song. you know, and it weren't played enough where it's played into the ground where you got sick of it. Well, that allowed a little bit more radio play, a little bit longer.
Yep.
And it also allowed when people said, oh, I want to put a record in a movie, it got placed in a movie, but it never got put in movies in such a way where you're like, okay, that's done now. I'm sick of it now.
Right.
I mean,
right.
So that's really what's helped. I mean, I you know, it took me a long time to come to this realization, but it's one hit, but I would take it against anybody else's record, especially in my genre. I would take it against
right.
anybody else's record in terms of
right.
what it the money it's been able to make, the popularity,
sure.
the ability to attract new audiences, all of that stuff. I
sure.
I would put it up against anybody's record. So yeah, I'm fine with it. Took me a while, you know, into my 30s, you know, if not 40s, but it
right.
took me a while to figure that out.
Well, and you look at the other avenues it's created for you. I mean, you're involved with television, and just it's opened up avenues and doors that you may not have gone.
Absolutely. I just finished my first feature film, and we're in the process of finishing up post on it right now, and I'm hoping to go and find a distributor for it in the next couple of months. And I know a lot of not only the financial, but even the even the business connections, and even me
yeah.
directing. Like, I wrote it, I directed it, I financed it, I acted in it, like fifth roll down. I did so many things, and a lot of the skills that I used to get this done came from, you know, having an entertainment corporation for 25
yeah.
or 27 years rather, and being able to work my music the way I did. So I'm happy. I'm a lot of people are like, oh, I wish I had another. You know, there's a lot of people with long careers that wish they had one bus to move. Trust me,
yes.
there are.
Yeah, And again, when you just can't argue the numbers. You know, numbers
right.
don't lie, and it's clear and obvious what that's done. And I think that's really the most incredible part about all this and what you've done is what it's done for the hip hop industry. And you know, regardless what the naysayers may say about what that, you know, that whole one hit wonder thing, you can't argue that either. The industry and platform has been elevated because of what you're able to do.
Well, and here's the thing. I have this saying, and I'll keep it clean because you're on your radio. People who talk stuff, or people who talk
yeah.
junk, or people who talk stuff haven't done stuff. That's usually the way to say it. If anybody has been through this, then you know that being able to get a record out that people will hear and whatever, that's not the norm. That's the anomaly. It's quite a unique thing to get a record to have that much traction for people to know and know who you are and be able to establish a career and that kind of thing. It's like, yeah, I have the one record that people know, but in terms of licensing, I have like, gosh, upwards of 50, 60 titles that on a regular
yeah.
basis get used and make money, whether it be radio play licenses and whatever. Now, some
yeah.
of those checks may be for under a dollar, but that's 50 or 60 titles. I know people that have written hundreds of songs that can't get 10 titles to make money
gotcha.
For them. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
And that's the thing. Like, that was the thing that I learned when I was watching the whole business. And you know, Bust a Move is what they call I'm giving you inside terms now, but they call it an evergreen song. To whatever extent the music business has an infrastructure where a song can make money, Bust a Move will be a song that makes money. It's up there with
right.
like, you know, literally like a Sinatra, you know, or
right.
or that kind of thing. And
wow.
it's weird. It's not, trust me, it's not something that you can plan, but
right.
records
can.
that are able to make money for that length of time, get played on, you know, in various places, get used in different kind of media, that kind of thing. That's a unique thing. So watching all of that, you know, a lot of not only my love for film, but my knowledge of film came from me watching films to see how music was used in films. So I can look
right.
at a movie now and say, wow, they had a, you know, six-figure music budget. They probably had a seven-figure music budget. A lot of it probably came late because they were worried about the movie. So they put every hot record they probably could into it, and they paid a premium. All these things that I learned just coming from the music angle has helped me so much, not only in the film stuff that I'm doing now, but even in terms of business. I sit down with, you know, some of my good friends are you know, business people, and
right.
they discuss their business and you know, appealing to demographics and all those things. And these are things that I had to learn in terms of keeping my career going and actually expanding my career and trying to create new income sources and whatever. That's why you never hear
right.
stories of Young MC is broke and this and that. You won't hear
that's
that
it.
About me.
No.
You
well,
just
that's,
won't.
But you don't hear your name in anything, actually.
Right.
No scandals, no gossips, no anything.
No.
You're clean.
No, there's... dude, you can keep your head low. You know what I mean? For me, it's like at some point you realize, you know, that's where your lane is, number one. And number two is that the music business is really changing. And
right. For
me to say, okay, I'm going to try and reinvent and I'm going to try and this and try and that. The interesting thing, I read an article, in Rolling Stone in 1991. And mm-hmm. I preface this by saying I'm not a big fan of country music.
Okay.
I read a Garth Brooks interview, and he talks about the Eagles, and I love the Eagles. And he said if the Eagles came out in the 1990s, they would be considered country music because of how the genres have kind of lined up. And I thought about it, and because of the way the music is made and the harmonies and whatever, I'm like, he's exactly right. So that opened my ears in terms of country music. I say that because you look at hip-hop, there's kids that look at me and they say, okay, you make old-school hip-hop or golden-era hip-hop or throwback hip-hop. That is different than, a Jay-Z, a 50 Cent, a Kanye West that make, current hip-hop. And that they consider that a totally different genre. And I would never think that because, once again, I'm coming from the place where I better do it right or this whole music form is going to go
away. That's it. Right.
So if I'm sitting there looking at it like that, then I can't sit there and say, okay, I'm going to wake up this morning and I'm going to, make a record that will compete directly with the Kanye West, the Jay-Z's and all. And that's what the music business is trying to have you do. Oh, well, you can't make a record that competes with current guys, so you're irrelevant. No, it's not.
Right.
It took me to sit there and say, no, it's not. And it got to the point where I realized that it would be better for me in some cases not to put out a record every year. I stopped making whole new albums in 2009 because I saw this whole download single thing coming, and I'm like, okay, my business was made on licensing, on shows, but also, other than shows, it was made on licensing and being able to place in other kinds of media. And if I'm having trouble doing that with new music, then I need to stop and maybe get into that other media and then put my music in it. So I'm doing this film, and I, did a remix of a song that I haven't got licensed before, and I put that in the end credits of the film because I'm like, okay, at least I know we'll get this use, and if someone hears it in this film, then they'll turn around and maybe listen to that song, listen to that album, see if there's something else that wants to be licensed, because they'll see that it actually turns and helps make money. And that's a conscious decision I made, as opposed to running in a studio with every penny I had and saying, okay, I'm going to outdo Kanye West right now, or I'm going to outdo whatever, because those guys are having trouble with the shift in music business. I saw an interview with 50 Cent where it's like, I could tell you right now there'll never be another 50 Cent. And it's not because I'm so great. It's because the music business is literally shifting under our feet right now.
Yeah.
And when he's saying that, and he came out like 10 years after me, I'm like, okay, let me take heed of that. As opposed to trying to bang my head against the wall, which, once again, a record company will, if they don't tell you that explicitly, they will they will blame you for it if it doesn't happen the way that, that they want.
Well, it seems to me that artists coming in now, they've got to think it's got to be more than just about the music now, because of the shift that you talked about. And when you look at your time, how much is time spent doing shows and studio versus the other stuff?
I mean, when I get shows, I get a few shows a month. I go out, I do the shows, and that's great. And everything is about the presentation. I used to do, let me see how many, I think I have 7 or 8 albums, something like that. So every time I would make an album, I would make the majority of the show. I would do like a typical show or a typical like rock band or something like that. The majority of the show, the beginning of the show, first three, four, five songs would be all stuff from the new album. And then I would go into a little old school and then I would do Bust a Move to Close. And that would be my show. And then it got to the point where it's like, okay, well, the people aren't buying albums, so why am I promoting albums? So I went back through all my albums and I said, okay, what's the stuff that's responded to best on stage? Like, what's the stuff that I like performing, that people like hearing me do? Obviously, you keep Bust a Move in there. That's fine. So that closes.
Sure.
But everything else, I literally took one song from 3 or 4 different albums, and that's my show. So I literally get up and I say, okay, this is the best song from my Engage the Enzyme album. It's called Feel the Love. That's the best song that I perform off that record. That will be in every show. I had a song called Rolling that I was able to get some some good traction on them, whatever. I do that in my show, you know, for longer sets. I went to Australia. They, you know, I knew Know How was a big record in Europe and Australia, so I brought that back, and now I do that in certain shows. It's at the point now where it's a system. I used to walk around with CDs. Now I have a thumb drive that has all my show lengths on it. So literally, you tell me how long of a show you want, whether it's a more hip hop show or a more dance show or freestyle show, and I'll have something that will fit time and the genre for each one. I literally just put it in the computer, pick the set, and go. And it's not because I'm not paying attention to the music, but it's actually I want to cater my show to the audience, because if you follow around a lot of old school acts, they'll do the same exact show every place. It could be 60-year-old white folks, or it could be 18-year-old, you know, minorities, and they'll do the same exact show. And people see that. People know that. And if you put on a bad show with the internet, it gets all over the place, whatever. Sure. So I really take a lot of, not only a lot of pride, but a lot of care in what I do. All of that stuff is, you know, all of that stuff, if you want to be a professional and last in this business, you know, you have to do. And then my last point would be me being literally 25, 26, 27 years away from my biggest record. I'm still getting shows because a lot of these new kids can't even get through 16 bars. And if they do, they want to charge you arms and legs more than you can. You know, they'll charge you, they'll outcharge a club. They'll charge you stadium prices when they can't draw stadium crowds. So they're pricing themselves out of live performance. So then that, you know, they're like, oh well, I have a reasonable budget and I want to hear something that I like. That's when I get a call. And all of that stuff, you know, that's all stuff that I've learned doing this for this length of time.
It is our artist legacy 101 is what you're teaching right here for people.
Right?
To keep yourself going. One last point I want to make is something that I don't think gets enough credit, as far as I'm concerned, is you stayed in school and got your degree. And that's a big thing. That's a big thing, as far as I'm concerned, because of the fact that you easily could have, and I don't think anyone would have argued with you and said, "No, you're crazy for doing that." You easily could have walked away from your education and gone out and pursued your career. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of credit to be given because of that, because you know you got your education.
Well, here's the thing. When I was doing it, a lot of the rappers, I got signed in 87 and I was due to graduate in 89. So it took a while for things to bubble up and percolate in LA. So that was about a year. And then at the beginning of, I want to say 88, we took a trip to Europe and I took a week off from school so we could promote records, you know, the records overseas. Or it was either beginning of 88 or beginning of 89, pre-Bust the Move. Point being is that the rappers and people in the music side were telling me I should quit, and I'm like, no, I'm going to stay. But I had people at school, like people in law school, people in you know, saying, Marvin, you should leave. This is what you want to do. And I'm like, no, I'm going to stay in because I want to get the degree. I'm so close, you know, not only for my parents but for me. And what that did is every time I took a meeting, people knew that I had the degree. So I wasn't in a desperate position when they say, okay, we can screw this kid because he has nothing else. They knew that I was probably as educated as they were, and I could get up and walk away. I knew that there were good deals that I got because of that. I knew there were good decisions I made because of that. I knew when somebody threw a big check at me, I'm thinking amortization. I'm thinking, well, what are the taxes I'm going to pay, and what am I going to lose in my royalties? No, I won't take that big check. People don't do that normally, but the longevity of my career is because I didn't turn around and take the big check. Because if you take a big check and everybody sees that you take a big check, they're going to want to try and get a piece of that big check. Gotcha. Even the people, by the way, even the people that pay you will advertise that they gave you that big check to make themselves look good. And if you don't recoup, then they say, oh, well, he took this big check from us, and now look at, you know, this bad guy. And then that screws you up in the future trying to get more money from somebody else.
And
all of that stuff happens.
Man, the music industry is something else, ain't it?
It's crazy.
Well, the stuff that you've learned, obviously, is done you well. And I'm really glad that we've had an opportunity to chat about not just Bust and Move, but just in terms of your approach and entering into your career and all these things that has come out of as a result of that, you know, that one song. But certainly, you know, you're certainly more than just one song. Tell our listeners, please, where they can connect with you. I know the social media is a you got to be there.
the website is youngmc.com, so you can, you know, you get to me at youngmc@youngmc.com. I have an official, well, the Twitter is at official Young MC. And, yeah, I'm doing shows from time to time. You see me around. And like I said, I have a new movie that I'm just finishing up called Justice Served. And we got Lance Henriksen and Gail O'Grady and myself and Lachlan Monroe, who's a big actor from up there. He's in it as well. So I'm very excited about that, making that new step into a new element of my career. And I'm just happy, man. I'm happy to be taking advantage of the opportunities that have presented to me because of Bust the Move and everything else that's going on with me.
That's it. Well, amazing stuff. Appreciate you, my man, for taking the time. So, listeners, let's get back to the music right here on Down with the Kings on Maximum FM Hip Hop. Let's go.